commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode number 9.
Rejecting Earth's intergalactic bid for extraterrestrial porn since 11 AD.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And clearly Jen is still with us because we're stuck with her sort of like a bad rash.
Teehee.
And I don't know when Adam's coming back, but apparently like his whole town just became like Jericho and got auctioned off, like sectioned off from the rest of the world. So I don't even think they have phones or
Black
power.
Black hole. Must have been cool.
Yeah, Jericho. It is Jericho. Like, we're like a nuclear war, and they're like, oh.
That was a nuclear war, not a black hole. They were cut off from the rest of the world.
Well, it can't be a black hole, because I'm getting messages from him. Maybe it's from beyond the grave. I don't know.
Maybe it's from a different dimension.
Maybe. But point is, I don't know when he's coming back, so Jen is sort of stuck with us for a while. She's kind of like herpes, but, you know.
Thanks.
She's gonna appear. We're gonna get, you know, some...
That's okay. I will officially take on the Fanty role. Yeah. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Since you guys still are arguing over ski and fee. Anyway. Right.
Anyway, so this week, no intro discussion again because we're trying to keep them short. It's failing miserably, but...
Miserably.
Very miserably. They're getting longer the more we try to cut things out. So maybe we should put more things in and then we'll be shorter. I don't know. It's weird. So this week, just going to dive straight into news. And the first thing is going to be rant-worthy because it's something I found from Jason Sanford, who is awesome. He's a great writer. You should all read him. I just talked about a paper about him, but that has nothing to do with this. It has to do with Tin House, the sort of literary magazine that's delved into the occasional genre fiction issue. They have a new submission policy, which is that they... will now only take unsolicited submissions during fall if it's accompanied by a receipt for a hardcover or paperback book from a real-life bookstore.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's completely screwed, because this is almost exactly like what I was trying to explain to you, which is the poetry.com thing where, you know, you would go and you send your poem and they would go, oh, we'll publish it, but you gotta buy our book. You know, with the exception being that Tin House just wants you to buy any book, but it's still requiring you to purchase something in order to submit to them. But unlike poetry.com, which would still publish your poem, Tin House may reject you.
Based solely on the fact that you weren't willing to go out and spend money. What about people who use libraries, completely use libraries for their books?
What if they're poor?
Right.
Like, I mean, they're like, you know, what, 40 million people in this country are in poverty?
I don't know, something like that. We'll go with that number.
I mean, they could probably afford a book, I imagine, but you know, like,
maybe.
Do they have to buy a book every time they submit something? They have to buy a new book? Can they send the same receipt?
Does it have to be a new book, or can it be a used book? I mean, I just bought a book from a thrift store for $1.
Yeah.
And I get a receipt, but, I mean,
I don't know.
That count?
I don't know. It doesn't indicate, but, I mean, maybe they're not that anal about it, but it's still a stupid policy. Like, what kind of BS is this?
They shouldn't force people to buy anything in order to get published. I mean, their whole premise is that they think that more people read or more people want to get published than actually buy books. So what?
Okay.
That's not going to fix, you know, the industry.
No, this is just going to piss people off.
Right.
So...
take them off your list.
Oh, they are. I have ceremoniously. Thank you. Ceremoniously removed them from my Amazon wish list because they have a bunch of issues that were really interesting. Like they had female writers doing like fantasy, which I thought was really interesting. But now I'm not going to buy it. So
yeah,
I'll pirate it.
They have made themselves irrelevant.
Yeah, and this
as
is interesting
Jason Sanford says.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jason's, I think Tin House is one of the few relevant lit magazines, but Sanford's been ripping into all of the like online literary magazines and the print ones, because really where science fiction has completely done the opposite, which is they don't have a big market share, but yet we have all of these successful online models of science fiction magazines for short fiction.
Right.
And there are like none that are at the same caliber or level in terms of paying their authors and producing quality material in the sort of literary world. I don't know enough about that, mostly because I don't read literary stories because I just find them boring. So, yeah, whatever. So it's a stupid policy. I can't believe they did this. I understand, like, oh, they want to get people to read from real bookstores and it helps, like, the brick and mortar. And I'm like, that's great, but because I shouldn't have to buy a book to have you reject my manuscript. Like, that's just bite me. This is kind of like, this is just another place that I won't submit to, just like I won't submit to the big two that don't take electronic submissions.
Right. I mean, it's your way of, sticking it to the man, and I think it's totally sensible, because...
It's not so much sticking it to the man, it's just like, it's really stupid. Why don't they take
electronic
submissions?
Well, it's a stupid policy.
It's an all dumb policies. That's just, like, they're stuck in, like, the 1200s. It's just...
They're not gaining themselves any customers. They're not gaining bookstores any customers. Just because they want receipts doesn't mean that people are going to specifically go out and buy books just to get published in their magazine.
No, in fact, I think people are just going to switch. They're just going to go to other places. You can submit to the New Yorker, which probably pays better than a Tin House, and gives you more recognition for free online.
Well, there you go.
So they can suck on that, bastards.
Suck us.
Yeah. But anyway, so I guess we don't have any other really interesting, like, lit news, but we do have a really cool movie news thing, which is totally sci-fi, which involves Nazis and space.
Which is a fantastic combination.
Absolutely. Especially since the Nazis were actually trying to do space stuff towards the end of World War II. Most people don't know that, but they were.
They were trying to do a lot of things.
Yes, I mean, in fact, something I just
pioneered read, quite a few things.
One of the things I just read was what pushed the Cold War and the space race was precisely the rush to acquire engineers, technicians, and actual weaponry and bits and pieces from the V2 rockets.
From the Nazis.
It was both. It was mostly the U.S. and the Russians rushing to do it. But But yeah, that was like really what sort of pushed it. Was like, because nobody had anything like that, but yet the Germans did. So, yeah.
Well, the Germans did a couple things right. Unfortunately, they did most things wrong.
Yes. Well, I mean, not all of them. I mean, they did eventually surrender.
The Nazis. So the Nazis did most things wrong. Yeah. Anyway, the movie premise is fantastic. It's basically that Nazis made it into space. They escaped right before the end of the war and established a base on the dark side of the moon, which is why we haven't seen them.
And I'm going to assume there's going to be some Pink Floyd in here.
I don't know. However, the soundtrack is pretty good, so... But I don't think they went with Pink Floyd for this one.
Oh, well, they should have, and Dark Side of the Moon and all.
Well, obviously, but that's kind of cliche, don't you think?
Shut up. It's totally acceptable. It's just like Iron Man using the theme.
Right. So anyway, so the Nazis, apparently, who went to the Dark Side of the Moon, are now coming back.
Yes.
To take over the Earth.
With UFOs. Nazi UFOs.
Nazi UFOs. It's actually interesting. I think they have two different versions of their space vehicles in each preview. Because what they've done is they produced a trailer how long ago? Something like a year ago?
It was a while ago. I think it was like a year, yeah.
They produced an initial trailer. It's a movie company that has also done another film online that got rave reviews.
And, it's called Star Trek.
Right. So they then produced this sort of teaser trailer. And their fans loved it. But the only way they could actually make the movie is if people donated money.
Yeah.
And so their fans are financing the film. They also have some traditional financiers, but I think primarily they've been going off of donations. And they are planning on making a full-length feature film for $8 million.
$8.5 million,
and they have half of it, I believe, at this
point?
Nope,
they have 90% of it, actually.
90%, which is amazing. I mean, I'm stunned.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, the first teaser has had 1.3 million YouTube views in the past 2 years.
Which is a lot, but not that many.
That's a lot for a random, no-name, theoretically, science fiction teaser trailer for a movie that doesn't exist.
Oh, well, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, the old Spice guy is only getting like 100,000 views.
I like him.
anyway. Moving on.
Yeah,
I could talk about him all night.
Yeah, okay. So they raised, almost all of their $8.5 million to make this film. And it's by Finnish filmmakers, so, I mean, they could probably make it for $3, so they'll basically keep all of it for themselves. But... Yeah, I'm just so wrong. I just made fun of all Finnish people. That was not good.
No, that wasn't very good.
But, I mean, that's probably part of why they have a smaller budget, is they're probably going to film it in locations that they are probably local to them. So, I mean, but that's...
Oh, yeah, no. And I think a large portion of it is, going to be CGI. So, yeah. And the video effects are brilliant.
Yeah.
Incredibly well done. I mean, I was stunned for something that I imagine they haven't done for much money at all. The teasers are gorgeous. And I have to admit, I'm really looking forward to the film.
Yeah, oh yeah, me too. Yeah, yeah.
I have no idea when it's going to come out, but...
Well, I don't think it says when because, I mean, they haven't even begun filming it, but...
No. But when they do, it's going to be genius.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's space Nazis. I mean, really.
Nazis in space. In flying saucers.
Exactly. Not quite as good as what I think David Weber's movie should be. But, vampires versus aliens. But
oh, well, we already had, vampire clowns and killer clowns, so whatever.
Yes, but you didn't have vampires helping out human beings against aliens trying to take over the Earth. And yeah. I think that's what the new book is about. I don't even know if that's actually what the book is about. I've decided that's what the book is about, and that sounds awesome.
All right, well, that
totally needs to be a movie.
All right, well, why don't we move on from our space Nazis to a little bit of science stuff, which is the big one, I think, well, at least in terms of accomplishments, is the solar-powered airplane that they just flew for 26 straight hours, including through the night, and landed it with, 3 hours left on the battery. And it's all solar-powered. It has no other power source. It's all... And it flew in the air, in the sky.
Well, that's what planes do.
Yes, at 8,700 meters, by the way. Which is 28,543 feet, which is 2.5 times the... Or a little over 2.5 times the height that airplanes generally fly.
I wonder if that's just to, for less interference from cloud cover.
Maybe. I don't know how fast 68 knots is. That's how fast it flew, but
the hell in comparison, 68
knots. What's 68 knots? I don't know what that is.
Well, should I know?
What is
fast?
That? It's 3 miles an hour? I don't know.
No.
Why do you put
anyway,
it in knots? I just whatever.
It's got 12,000 solar cells built onto 193-foot wings. And this one is just a prototype. So hopefully, they're planning on flying another one around the world in a continuous flight.
Should be good.
So hopefully that one's successful. Yes, it would be good. I mean, I believe somebody else just recently, one of the big plane manufacturers, Boeing or something, also did a solar plane. Either solar or some other hybrid, maybe, just recently. And, this is incredibly important. I mean, green technology is important to me, period.
Yeah.
I'm one of those smart people that believes in climate change.
I don't believe in it. Whatever.
Then I can't talk to you anymore. I can't be friends anymore. And you just lost the title of fee.
Actually, I just looked up the top speed for this thing was 68 knots, which is like 74 miles an hour. So you won't be doing any commercial flights like this.
Not anytime soon. I mean, it can't even, who knows if it would even hold multiple passengers. You know, it's a very lightweight plane currently, and it's going to be a while before solar technology can power a large commercial airline.
Yeah.
But they're making progress, and that's really the important thing.
Yeah. But also people making progress is the frickin' Army.
Yes, yay Army, but granted, they've got huge budgets, so they should be able to. It would be really sad if they weren't.
It's taken them long enough. They now are testing hydrogen fuel cell-powered tanks.
Right, and this is an interesting thing, only because the military has always had issues with supply lines. I mean, that's in the long history of military, of warfare, period, supply lines are the most important thing.
Right.
You've got a good supply line. If you can protect your supply line, then you're good for go. When you get too stretched, when your supply line gets weakened, you're doomed. You're just hosed. So even in the modern era, the military still has to worry about supplies.
Yeah.
And they're currently, you know, for their tank brigades, calling around huge amounts of diesel fuel, which is like, why? We've got all this technology out there. Maybe you should apply it.
Yeah, the problem with hydrogen fuel cells is that they're not, to produce hydrogen fuel cells, it's not a green process.
Granted.
It's actually it pollutes just as much as diesel.
But they're breaking away from a more traditional path. I mean, for the Army, it's important because they won't need to haul around the diesel. Hopefully, they'll switch to something that's a little bit greener. I doubt they will because they don't have any reason to yet.
They could just do it by heat. Come on, all the wars we're fighting are in friggin' deserts. They could just...
Currently.
Like we're ever going to find anybody in some place that's cold.
Nobody lives anywhere it's cold. That's probably
exactly
a good point.
I rest
However,
my case.
It is the cold that defeated both Napoleon and Hitler, so...
I know, but why are we ever invade Russia? We would just nuke them.
We might invade China through Mongolia.
No.
It's there.
China wouldn't even be worth it.
Yeah, I know. Granted.
we'll just send them, you know, some Nigerian spam mailers and, you know... Yeah, we'll do that. Was that too soon?
maybe. Anyway, okay, it's a little bit greener than hauling around gasoline, especially since, you know, they'd have the diesel. They'd have to power the vehicles that have to haul the diesel. So going towards a hydrogen fuel cell, it might not be the best method, but it is something.
Yeah.
They're making an effort.
It's just cool.
It is cool.
Hydrogen fuel cell powered tanks. They're going to have to come up with some cool acronym for it, like Frank. You know?
What does Frank have to do with hydrogen fuel powered tanks?
I don't know. I'll come up with a good way to turn that into an acronym.
Oh, okay. I hope so.
Friendly.
Don't even bother.
Friendly.
Still thinking.
Really... Friendly, really awesome ninja
karate.
I don't know.
No, I'm sorry, but that's just, it's not going to work.
Okay, whatever.
Anyway, the only problem with a hydrogen fuel cell powered tank is if anybody steals that tank and they're just sitting there with a hydrogen fuel cell, then kaboom. Actually, I don't know if that would happen, but...
I don't know enough about it to say if that's true.
But it would be scary if it was. It would be like having a nuclear-powered tank. That would be scary.
No, because it'd probably just have, like, self-destruct. And we would probably intentionally let people steal them. Because then we'd know
then
where their bases are.
And self-destruct them?
In their little terrorist cells and stuff. Yeah.
Because
it would teach them to steal our tanks. Like, this is what happens. You get nuked. Just saying. You know, that would deter people from stealing stuff here. Like, if every time you stole a car just blew up with you inside it, would people steal cars ever again?
I shouldn't laugh about that. That's not funny.
It is funny.
That tells you what's wrong with that. Yeah, we could go to like Singapore's method and just beat everybody who chop off their hands.
No.
I don't know.
No, I'm not interested in punishment after the fact. I'm interested in having cars that have a punishment built into them for thieves.
Built in.
See,
I think we should just, it might be a little bit easier and more cost effective to just have like electrified steering wheels. And if you're not like DNA compatible, you get like super shocked.
See, but I just don't, that's not as interesting as a car exploding on someone.
No, that's just not as violent and therefore not as man friendly as a car exploding on someone.
Could like instead of it be electricity, like they get injected with some sort of like mutating virus that turns them into a frog?
Sure. Either okay. That or ninja stars will fly out of nowhere and then whack them in the head.
Oh,
would that work?
Exploding or ninja stars in the head? Like now you're just splitting hairs, jerk.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to take it to its logical extreme.
Anyway, so the last bit of science news, I'm just going to let Jen announce this one because it's got a good punchline. So
I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the punchline, but DARPA has, that's the, you know, Pentagon's super spiffy research and development group, in case you didn't know. Has invented and is going into human trials for mind-controlled artificial arms, which is just kind of spiffy.
Yeah.
So basically, they're going to be hacking into people's brains, literally hacking, not like, you know, computer hacking, and implanting little neural interfaces and sticking the arm on, and people will be able to control these robotic arms with their brains.
Yep. And
we think there might be possible uses for the porn industry with these lovely prosthetic arms. I'll let Duke continue with that thought.
I don't need to give any details.
I don't think
just
you do.
One word.
I just think.
Just one word. Ready?
One word.
Multitasking.
Multitasking. Indeed. Yeah. That's the word. So, you know, we have brilliantly taken something that could actually be useful to people without arms and turned it into something for the porn industry because we're just cool like that.
It's awesome, though.
Either that or we're really sad human beings who have way too much time on our hands and too active imaginations.
Well, when we did talk about this, the first thing we did come to was that. So
I know. Well, it just made sense.
It just totally made sense. I mean, come on. Imagine what you could do with an extra arm.
Yes. So many things.
So many things.
I could finally do the dishes and read a book at the same time.
Well, that's all right, I guess. That's not...
And not quite as cool as, you know, multitasking.
As quote. Multitasking, yes. Yeah.
But it would still be useful.
Yeah, well, it'll be good for people who are missing arms, too. So maybe we can get two robotic arms and they can multitask, too.
That would be nice. Although I have a feeling that even one arm and one surgery might be a little bit too expensive. And
you could do a two-for-one sale. Come on.
Two-for-one. Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's really cool. And
it is. I mean, it's, I think it's fantastic that, you know, DARPA's doing this only because, again, if you go back to the military, there are a ton of, what are they called when they're missing arms and legs?
Injured.
Thank you, vocabulary man. Anyway,
maimed amputees.
Amputees. There are a lot of amputees in the military, and this is incredibly important to them. So it's good that DARPA is putting funds towards things like prosthetics.
Yep.
So
we'll have RoboCop, and it'll be awesome.
Exactly.
A whole army of RoboCops.
Although if they remake that movie, I might have to kill myself.
They're doing it.
I know.
And Peter Weller's is not going to be in it.
I know. That makes me sad.
Although he might. There's rumors that he's going to play like a secondary character, but I don't know, whatever.
Did you know he's like a history professor?
Yeah, I could totally see that.
I think it's him. He was actually, he does something for like the History Channel too, because he's a professor of something.
I can totally see that.
It's kind of spiffy. And
you should do it as RoboCop, though. Can you imagine being taught like, you know, the 1800s of U.S. history, like early American colonialism, as from like him as dressed up as RoboCop? Like, you would pay attention, wouldn't you?
Yes, actually, I totally would.
I'd be enthralled. Anyway, so we're going to go to the music, and we're going to come right back, and we're going to actually talk about something that is near and dear to my heart.
But not mine.
But not yours, but that's because you're a communist, so whatever.
Yes.
You don't have a soul.
No, I don't.
All right, we'll be right back. And we're back with our main segment. Today we're talking about Star Wars, the greatest sort of semi-science fiction movie of all time, or series.
You called it science fiction.
Yeah, it's technically science fiction by the movie standard of what science fiction is, but it's not really. But okay. We won't get into that. That's not what this is about. What this is about is TotalFilm.com released... mostly sounds like a complete farcic joke.
It's a satirical possibility, yes.
Yeah, of what would make for a, I guess, good reboot of Star Wars.
Although their version of a good reboot is crap.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb and retarded.
Which is why I'm really hoping that this is a completely satirical take on how to reboot it.
Yeah, it probably is. I mean, they make some good selections, though. Like, for example, with the directors, like, they mention names like, you know, the obvious is Peter Jackson, but they also do, like, Neil Blomkamp is mentioned in there, and some others. Christopher Nolan, although I don't know if he would be good for it, but, you know, just these sort of big names. But they do mention J.J. Abrams, so that pretty much throws their credibility into the ocean.
That's because you're a dumbass.
No, that's because J.J. Abrams is, like... a cancer in the film world. So
okay, J.J. Abrams is capable of rebooting franchises. Obviously,
no,
he did it with Star Trek. Even though you don't like the movie,
it's
a
movie.
Successful reboot, and I can't wait for the next one.
It's a
what
crap movie? I just cursed on this whole podcast. We're
Whatever.
Not supposed to curse. I'm gonna now have to put a beepy thing over my curse. You see what you've
Which
done?
Is- Hilarious.
Brought up J.J. Abrams, and now I have to curse. It's great.
Will you please get over J.J. Abrams? What I'm saying is he's capable of contemporizing films, which is what I think needs to happen with a Star Wars reboot, although you totally disagree with me, so whatever.
No, I don't disagree.
Not just on the J.J. Abrams thing, but on the whole how to reboot Star Wars.
Right. So that's our topic. I don't disagree with you in principle. I don't disagree with the idea of contemporizing it.
Right.
What we disagree with is you don't think that there should be a Star Wars movie which features original cast as primary actors.
Right, as primary actors. Right. I think it is fine if they are characters, but I don't think they should be the primary focus of the film with the original actors. If you're going to reboot it with the same characters, fine, but you need to recast them.
Well, like, did you redo the episode one?
Or the No. You would, like, do episode 7.
Oh, well, no.
Do episode 7, but without the original cast members.
No, I don't think you could do that without George Lucas being assassinated.
Well...
there are already enough Star Wars like junkies who are pissed off about the prequel movies. If he goes off and he just snuffs all of his the main actors and stuff that were in this out of it, I think
No. Well, no, okay, I'm sorry, but the actors are old. Old.
Which you would mean
too old.
Which is why you would have to write a series significantly after Return of the Jedi.
Or you recast them.
No. No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No, you can't.
You could totally do it. You can do it. It was successfully done with Star Trek, and it was well done with Star Trek as much as you just
said. No, nothing about Star Trek. Well, the first half of it was good, and then Future Spock, and it was all crap.
Whatever. The casting was very nice.
It was okay.
And I think they could do that. Spock was spot on,
but pretty much everyone else was iffy. Well, no, and Scotty.
No,
Scotty and Spock were pretty much it.
Doc was fantastic.
Oh, no, he was good. Yeah, no, I agree. He was pretty good. But I didn't like the guy who plays Chekhov. I thought they made him cartoony.
Well, to an extent, except that I really like the actor who played Chekhov. I think he did a good job doing that part. And I think it was actually a really nice version of Chekhov. He was very intelligent. He was there. He's a dweeb, which I kind of like of Chekhov.
I'm sorry. But he would never have been in the Federation. He never would have graduated. They would have made him an office clerk.
Mean.
It's mean, but that's reality. They don't make dweebs. They don't, like, if this were the real military, if we were in that world right now, we would
not
make
dweebs. It's the real military, though. It's the Federation.
Yeah, but that's the point being that there's just no way they would put him on a command level. There's just no way.
He wasn't on a command level. He was like,
yeah, that's the bridge.
Little science guy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's on the bridge, but he's just the little... He was running the little thingamajiggy.
Officer.
Anyway, we're not talking about Star Trek.
No, we're not.
What I'm saying is
that
the cast
was
good. It was a well-done reboot. It was contemporary. It was more relevant.
No, it wasn't more relevant. That's
well, then the original Star Trek was relevant. Like, if you just did the original Star Trek over again, that would have been stupid.
Yeah, but I don't think this... I think this one's even less relevant to our contemporary time.
Whatever.
What exactly makes it relevant?
I don't know.
They had an interracial kiss? Is that the relevance?
No, that's like totally been done, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of ridiculous. And it was terrible. That was a whole stupid plot line. It wasn't even explained in the damn
thing. I shouldn't have said relevant. It is contemporary, though. It was...
Yes,
it...
contemporary in a Michael Bay sort of way, which means that
right.
The plot doesn't make any sense. Good. Okay.
Regardless! My God! And you complain about me talking too much.
I'm sorry, you got
just
me
like
started on the new Star Trek. And...
I know. Okay, so what I'm saying is you can't, obviously, you just can't have the original cast coming back for Star Wars. I think a reboot could be done a la Star Trek.
No.
However, yes, where something, Michael Bay, yes, I mean, that's a terrible term, but it could be Michael Bay. And then it would become popular again.
It's already popular.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Kids like Clone Wars. And guess what? Most diehard fans of the franchise hate Clone Wars.
No, I've not heard that.
I've heard that many times. Clone Wars is the worst thing since sliced bread.
I'm thinking you're talking like the really old fat guys that still live in their mother's basements.
And are diehard Star Wars fans.
Yeah, but
and
they don't leave their mother's basements. So
and worship the canon. Those guys are like, Clone Wars sucks. It's awful. George Lucas
because
had
it's
his
a kid's
it,
show.
George Lucas is now pointless.
It's a kid's show. It's
and
not meant
so
like...
Well, yeah, I know, but I think it's actually... I like it. I enjoy Clone Wars. My kids enjoy...
I haven't seen it, but, you know, whatever.
I am not a fan of the canon of Star Wars.
Which canon?
The canon, as in the books, you know, the timeline, you know, this is how the character is supposed to be, and this is how the history is supposed to be. I don't really care about that aspect of Star Wars. Mostly because they totally destroyed all hope I had for the films when they made 1, 2, and 3. But I loved 4, 5, and 6 for what it was. A great, sweeping, epic science fiction awesomeness. Ha. I enjoyed that. And I think that they could continue with that awesomeness in a 7th installment.
Yeah, if they try to do the same characters and they recast them, that'll just be a complete failure.
No, it won't be. You
yes,
can do that.
You could do it, but it would be a complete failure. It would be awful.
Why would it be a failure?
It would just be awful.
I think Christian Bale would make a very fine Han Solo.
You mean Chewbacca. That's what they chose him as.
I know, that was ridiculous. But he would make a good Han Solo. Bad
no,
Chewbacca.
He would be a
obviously,
terrible
nobody
Han Solo.
Plays Chewbacca.
Except for Peter Mayhew.
Right.
who they would probably bring back.
Right, and that's fine. For the characters that you can't see their faces anyway, that's fine. But you can't use all the ancient actors to play their 25-year-old selves.
I wasn't saying that. I was saying you would set it significantly. No, not 100 years. You would set it 50 or 60 years after Return of the Jedi, because there are enough stories to tell in that time frame.
You told me that the main characters would still be there 50 to 60 years later.
Yeah, they would just be older.
Oh, lame! No!
Do you have any idea what happens within Star Wars after Return of the Jedi?
No, and I don't really care.
You should care.
I want to see it on film. I know, it's brilliant and amazing and blah, blah, blah.
There's a lot of violence.
And I'm okay with that. But I think you can do a seventh film that takes place when they're younger. I don't think bringing the original cast back will successfully reboot the franchise.
It may not successfully reboot it, but neither will bringing in a bunch of young douches to play classic characters. Like, if we have to make a compromise, I say none of our ideas goes through. Because if you get your idea, I will burn down Skywalker Ranch myself. So.
And yet, many people really liked young douchebags coming in and playing classic characters in Star Trek. Ergo, it can be done.
And you know why they were okay with that?
Why?
Because most of the people that were in the original Star Wars or Star Trek are now robots.
Exactly.
So they
are the people that were in the original Star Wars.
No, they're not robots now. Han Solo's not.
Decrepit.
They're not
wheelchair bound. Ancient people.
Do you have any idea, like...
Who are pooping themselves.
The oldest person of the original cast is Harrison Ford, and he's not that old.
He's like 80.
He's old, but he's not like... It's not like he's, like, dangling around and, like, he's geriatric with a walker. Like, the guy is an active man.
No, I know.
You know, and Mark Hamill...
I wouldn't mind seeing him.
Mark Hamill's only, like, 50.
Because I'm a Harrison Ford fan. Mark Hamill
is fairly young too.
Yeah, but they're all in their 50s, and I just don't care. I don't care about those actors anymore.
Okay, here we go. All right, let's talk
about
this.
The characters, but not the actors. I don't see the point to clinging to the actors.
Okay, for a second, let me try this on you then.
Okay.
You'd still bring back the original cast, but you would center the story not on the original cast as primary characters, but as secondary characters with, however, Han Solo and Leia Solo, she becomes Solo because they get married. They're two children. Well, they're three children. They have three kids.
I am going to beat the crap out of you. I could have sworn that's what I said 2 hours ago when we were first talking about this. Is that not what I said?
Yeah, but I'm making compromises here because they would still show up and they would still be active within the storyline. They just would not be the primary focus.
That's exactly what I was saying, is you make the primary focus younger characters who are going to be more exciting to a modern young audience, which is the people that are watching science fiction movies, or at least primarily. They're the ones pushing the tickets and, you know, making the millions.
I disagree. I think it's senior citizens. They like going to movies they don't understand.
Regardless, yes, exactly. That makes sense to me. Focusing on the children or whoever. I haven't read
considering
the
books, that one of the kids turns to the dark side and becomes a really evil freaking guy.
Exactly. So exciting. That could make multiple movies.
But within that world. Hold on. Sit.
Fine.
One sec. But the parents and on Anakin and all of, or well, not Anakin, Luke and all of them, they're not just like, hey, we're the parents and now we're going to disappear. Like, they still are active during that time.
And I'm fine with that. But like I said, I'm, they need to be supporting characters, not main characters.
I can make a concession.
An ensemble cast sort of thing, supporting characters and not main characters.
Just as long as Luke Skywalker gets to wield a lightsaber and Han Solo shoots first. Done.
Fine.
I get that. I can have that.
Sure. Why not?
Good.
I can go with that. I think that would make a good new film, and I think it could work to get it back into, you know, a general audience yeah. as opposed to just, you know, 10-year-old children who are watching Clone Wars.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that if Lucas ever tries to do more Star Wars is he has got to get away from any of the prequel, the in-between, or anything within the time frame we already have in the films. Like, he's just got to get away from all of that.
Definitely. He never should have made the first three movies in the first place.
I just think he should have done them differently.
Very, very, very differently.
I think the first one is not bad. The second one is pretty
horrible.
Bad.
Third one, awful.
The best part in the second one was the end. When Yoda whoops the shit out of Dooku.
Yes.
Yeah. And the third one was better than the second one, but not as, I don't think, quite as good as the first.
Basically, I would have been happy with the films if they just cut out the entire Anakin Amidala storyline.
I think the problem with the Amidala Anakin storyline is just that they had no chemistry on screen.
None whatsoever. It was fine in the first film. Although, and see, part of the problem was is that by the second film, it just became totally creepy.
Well, that's because he is kind of creepy. He's evil.
Well, yeah, and like half her age, creepy.
It's not that unusual.
It was creepy.
He was half her age when he was a kid. They're not creepy. It's not half her age anymore. She was like 16 and he was like 9.
Creepy.
It's not that creepy. Like,
creepy.
You're older than me, and we're technically married, so.
My husband might mind that.
Oh, well, he doesn't know about our secret eloping mint and thingy.
That's funny. Anyway.
Thank you. That was very patronizing.
I try. Anyway, so I would prefer George Lucas wasn't involved in the writing or the directing. I did like that they chose, what's his name, Neil Blomkamp in the film, TotalFilm.com.
Yeah, he could do some good series. I think he could definitely do some good stuff.
I think he could be a very good director of a Star Wars boot. So, I mean, I don't know. Doesn't he have a new film that's coming out?
He probably does. I don't know. I don't really care.
So, I mean, I would want to wait and see until after his second film, you know, because District 9, though freaking brilliant, I just want to make sure that he can keep up the good work, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who knows? I don't know. I think Lucas needs to be involved creatively, but he needs to...
Right, agreed.
Step back. He needs to not
direct. It's
his
baby.
He should produce. I think he should... be complete he should
for
have
sure.
creative control, but like, you know, because I mean it's his world, his story, so he should be able to say this is what has to happen, you know, this is
right.
the basic plot, this is what's going on, but like he should really get somebody else to come in and to help him specifically with dialogue, and then he needs to let somebody direct it, because
yes,
look, the first Star Wars movie, number 4, wasn't a bad movie. It wasn't a great movie. It's still better than the prequels, which is kind of
right.
sad because...
It is.
But it's like it's almost like Lucas...
Lucas like, lost his heart, and he lost his sense of adventure and of taking risks.
Yeah, and know, I think like, that's the problem, is he got so stuck within his Indiana Jones and his Star
exactly.
Wars worlds, he couldn't get back to the THX 1138 world.
Right. He became too obsessed with Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's like you have James Cameron who has successfully been producing, directing, writing movies for years. And he went back to Avatar, which was a film that he actually wrote years and years and years ago.
It's a terrible film.
But he finally, whatever. It was a beautiful film. Even if you totally discount the storyline and the acting and everything else, it was a gorgeous film.
Yeah, but that's not any
visually
effort on
stunning.
His part.
No, that is exactly effort on his part.
What did he
part
have to do? He just hired a bunch of people to
do it. Right. Well, yeah, but I think he's still the creative force behind the technology that they produced.
I could do that.
You know, I mean, and it's that type of thinking that somehow James Cameron has been able to continue with that, pushing the envelope. And George Lucas was like, I pushed the original envelope. I'm done.
Well, he did. Even with the originals, he was groundbreaking. And even with the new ones, he was groundbreaking with them. The things that he did with special effects had not been done at that point.
Really? Even with the 1, 2, 3? I don't recall seeing anything out of 1, 2, 3 that I hadn't seen before.
The way that they did them to a level that hadn't been done is particularly in episode 1 with the robot armies, with that had not been done on screen to that level before, and he really did establish a gold standard for visual effects at the time.
I suppose.
He did. He absolutely did.
Fine. I'll give
I know
that.
What I'm talking about.
Okay,
I
whatever.
Am
I didn't pay that much attention to, you know, science.
I've watched all of the Star Wars documentaries, so... By...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Loser.
I'm not a loser. I just like Star Wars.
I know, and I'm happy for you. No, my kids read the Clone Wars comic books. Mo was obsessed with the Clone Wars television show. And so it's... her, because granted, if a Star Wars reboot occurs, I'm sorry, but it's not going to be a while. It's going to be a while before they do anything.
Well, he'll be dead by then, probably.
Right, which is the perfect time to do it.
No, it's a terrible time to do it. And, like, I'll hand it over to his kids, and it'll
totally
be like
this thing, Lucas.
It'd be kind of like what happened after Walt Disney died. Everything went downhill for Disney.
Yeah, but that was more the direction that the CEOs were just bad until they got Lasseter in, so.
Yeah, well, and now, yeah, Pixar.
Exactly. So, they're coming back. You know what? Disney takes a lot of crap, but, they're still one of the most powerful corporations in the world, so.
And you know why that is?
Because they put crack in their movies?
No, because they have stock in porn.
Oh, that too.
Thank you. I rest my case. They're spearheading the research into robot arms controlled by your mind.
That would be funny. Yeah. Anyway, so if we were... Oh, that's right. See, we can't even cast it. Who would you cast as the kids?
Oh, well... How
Tell
far
me
in
about
advance
the
are
kids.
We talking? How far?
If we were going with the story premise that it's Leia and Han's children.
Right. But I mean, how far from now would it be?
You'd have to make them in their 20s.
God, I don't think they're quite in their 20s. I think they're the late teens when
they're being written about.
Well, I mean, because they're in the Young Jedi series, and it's a whole long process in which one of them goes bad during their training.
Mm.
And I believe it's at the Jedi Academy that's founded by Luke Skywalker, but I'm not 100% sure because I haven't read those particular books because mostly I just don't like reading Star Wars books that much anymore.
Gotcha.
But I think they're in their late teens, like 18,
19, early 20s. So you would have 20-plus-year-old actors because that's usually what they do.
Okay. Well,
playing teenagers.
What is that kid's name? Freddie Highmore? Is that his name?
Freddie Highmore, who they suggested as, you know, playing Luke Skywalker.
I think he would be interesting. I think he could do one of the kids.
He proved himself as an absolutely excellent child actor in the films that he's already done. So
yeah, it would be interesting to see him or Haley Joel Osment.
No,
I could see him. Not as the evil one. Not as the evil one. Possibly as a good one. He could not do the evil. I don't know what kid you would get to play evil. Maybe you just get Dev Patel.
I think you need better looking actors than people like Freddie Highmore.
Really?
He's not sexy enough.
Right, because Luke, Scarface Luke, very sexy.
He wasn't Scarfaced when he made the original films.
He was after the first one.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
Barely.
After they'd finished filming principal photography for the first film, Mark Hamill got into a car accident and disfigured his face, which is why they didn't do pick-me-ups for that. And that's why
remember.
That's specifically why the scene where he gets mauled by the giant snow creature in Empire, that's why that's in there.
That's right.
Lucas had to write that for him, specifically to account for why his face now has a scar.
Yeah, but he was still good-looking. Now he's not, but he was then.
No good-looking people look good-looking when they're old. Look at Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford is still sexy.
He's only sexy because he was sexy for like 30 years. Regardless, it's like his sexy following him around.
Whatever. I think that you're gonna need sexy, hot young actors to play the characters. Period. But
the problem is what sexy does not translate to good.
It does occasionally. Christian Bale, anyone? Hello?
I don't find him attractive.
Well, I find him absolutely, completely, compellingly sexy.
I know, but you're weird, and you really like violent dudes.
No, I don't.
Like, you, like, American Psycho, like, that version of Christian Bale, like, that's totally works for you.
Okay, no, only his ass in that movie. Not the character. And I've never actually watched the full film. I just like watching the shower scene over and over again.
Okay, anyway. I don't know. I don't know who you would pick. The problem is by the time they would ever make this movie, any of the people we think of now would be too old. Just like when they were doing the Ender's Game movie. You know, people like Haley Joel Osment had been up for the part, but now he's too old for it.
Way too old.
So, I mean, I don't know who the hell we would even...
You'll end up with some Disney Channel actors.
Just keep Dakota Fanning out of it.
She's kind of sexy.
She's... Just, she would make a terrible, because there's the two boys and one of the girls. There's the two boys and a girl, and I just know she would make terrible. I just don't, who would you pick that's evil?
I have no idea. I can't even think of young actors right now.
Evil.
Except the only people I can think of right now that are young are all geeks, and I just don't want them in my Star Wars movies. Geeks watch Star Wars. They do not act in Star Wars.
I would act in Star Wars.
I rest my case.
I could totally do it.
No.
I could be, like, their uncle.
You have just made this entire conversation irrelevant. Are you proud of yourself?
Yeah, but maybe that's a good time for us to stop before this gets any weirder than it already needs to be. Me as Uncle... Uncle what? What would I be, like, Uncle...
Uncle Buck!
Uncle Buck! Oh yay!
So that's exactly. So that's our successful Star Wars reboot. We put it about 40 years in the future when the kids are the main characters. The original main characters are supporting roles, and Duke is Uncle Buck. I'm loving it already.
Oh yeah, that'll be a classic instant.
Instant classic.
Instant classic. All right, guys. So we're going to go to music again, our porno music that was supplied by Disney.
And while we're listening to it, I'm going to be multitasking.
So filthy. We'll be right back. And we're back with our reading, writing, and babbly nonsense section. This week, I just got back from England, so I am now reading other things, finally, other than new weird stuff.
Did you finish Perdido?
I finished most of the stuff I was supposed to read, but I'm not going to say what I did and did not finish. There were some things that I just put down that I was just like, this is just too stupid. But Perdido wasn't one of them. I did a lot of reading in that. But I am reading all of Tobias Bekele's science fiction novels, which is Crystal Rain, Ragamuffin, and Slow Mongoose again. And I am reading a book on the French Guiana. Is that how you say it? French Guiana?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's called, I think it's Space in the Tropics. And the two chapters I'm reading are actually about the space program in French Guiana.
Oh, right. You mentioned that last week. How is it?
Yeah. It's actually really interesting, but it's not quite what I need for my paper, so whatever. And I'm reading some other stuff, and at some point I'm gonna actually read something for fun, but
yay.
I doubt that. I'm probably just gonna read Spanish books instead.
What?
I have to practice for my Spanish exam.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Good luck.
Nah. Yeah, so that's what I'm reading.
Are you writing anything this week?
Yeah, I started a story while I was on the plane, and then I fell asleep in the middle of it.
Sounds exciting.
I can't stay awake on planes. I've just figured this out. Like, I just pass out.
That's kind of funny. It's probably a good thing, seeing as how you had the most terrifying flight of your entire life.
No, because I couldn't go to... I was, like, half asleep and half awake, and I couldn't figure out where I was half the time. It's just weird. But, yeah, so, I mean, I did a little bit of writing, and I finished that paper that I was working on, obviously. So I started some new story involving alien things that have sack brains, and I don't know how it's going to work. It feels like Doctor Who, but literary.
Literary Doctor Who.
Yeah, it's kind of where it feels like right now. I don't know where it's going. It involves some guy who's on an alien planet full of weird people, and then bad stuff happens.
Well, I'll read it.
I'm sure you will, and I'm sure it'll make sense to me when I finish it.
Good. That's all that matters.
But what are you? What are you reading, madam?
I think last week I mentioned that I was reading Perdido Street. Guess what? I'm still reading it. I got kind of bogged down about two-thirds of the way through, and I'm having a little bit of trouble pushing through to the end. Not all because it's not interesting or good. I'm just, it's a slow-moving book, and I'm kind of slogged down by it. And then I got distracted. I'm not sure why, but I got distracted, and I'm also still reading, and I think I was reading this a couple weeks ago too, but I'm not sure, The Winds of Change, which is a nonfiction. The tagline is climate, weather, and the destruction of civilizations. So it's how climate change has affected civilizations throughout history, and it's fascinating. Really enjoying it. And that's leading me to, I'm not sure why that's leading me to The Road, but my next one is going to be The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Yay.
And I am really excited about finally reading that one. I have not seen the film. I want to, but I haven't seen it yet. And then on my...
I would rein in on your excitement because you'll be disappointed.
I don't think I will be.
You will be.
Why?
Because if you give it too many high expectations for that, you're just going to know.
Oh, that's true. I don't have horribly high expectations. I get excited about everything very easily.
Just hope that it's remotely interesting.
Remotely interesting. And that's pretty much what I'm hoping for. I'm excited about remotely interesting. So,
okay.
I'm going for it. And then in my to-be-read pile, because I check books out from the library, so I only have 3 weeks to read them. I also have The Hallowed Hunt by Lois McMaster Bujold. It's one of her fantasy novels, and I believe it's in the same vein, in the same world as her Paladin of Souls and Curse of Chalion, which were brilliant fantasy novels, if you haven't read them yet. And I'm actually tremendously excited about this, because Paladin of Souls and Curse of Chalion were... renewed my interest in fantasy, because I had kind of fallen out of it for a while, and then I read Curse of Chalion and was like, oh my god, why have I not been reading fantasy recently? It was brilliant. And then I've been steadily disappointed since then. I'm not finding fantasy that are really catching my interest. And then I have Octavia Butler's Xenogenesis series.
Ooh, go Octavia Butler!
Yes, exactly. I had actually picked up Dawn from the library. They didn't have any of the rest of them. And then I went to a thrift store, and
you got the omnibus,
and I got the omnibus. So for $1, actually $2, because I donated $1. But I'm stoked that I finally get to read it. I'm definitely on a science fiction kick recently. I suppose I can't really call myself fanty, since I haven't been reading fantasy, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, I've been reading New Weird, so that's kind of like this weird nebulous between space. It's bizarre.
Right. So I have to finish Perdido. I'm going to slog through that, and I have to finish this nonfiction, which I'm happy to finish. And then I'm moving on to The Road. So, yes. Yay.
Fantastic.
Me. And yeah, I'm kind of obsessed with climate change recently. I'm not sure why. Mostly because I keep hearing reports of people being stupid about it.
Well, that's not hard.
Climate change doesn't exist. With our nice American, we don't trust science society. Yeah, and obviously I'm not writing anything because I don't write. I haven't even written a red letter this week. It's
quite sad. Well, that's okay. But this does bring us to this nifty little thing that we're going to talk about, which is this. It's called I Write Like. It's IWL.me. And it's this thing where you just enter in some of your writing, and it compares you to a bunch of famous writers, and it tells you who you write like.
And I'm sure it's very scientifically accurate.
It's probably not. It's completely wrong. but I put in a number of things. I put in some of my academic work and some of my written stuff. And I got everything from, let's see, which is the order? I got compared to James Joyce, H.P. Lovecraft, Dan Simmons, Charles Dickens, and then Ursula K. Le Guin.
And Chuck Palahniuk.
Yes, for a different story that you, that you put in. And you got compared to who?
Stephen King, that other guy that I keep forgetting the name of.
Very specific.
I know. I'm good at that. H.P. Lovecraft and Simmons. Why do I keep forgetting his freaking name? Anyway, he was the one that I got. David Wallace Simmons, something like that.
David Foster Wallace?
David Foster Wallace, thank you.
Yeah.
Two of my things. One of my short stories and one of my academic papers were popped up David Foster Wallace. Lord knows what that means.
It means you're in crazy a little bit.
Well, then I got Stephen King and H.P. Lovecraft, so...
It makes sense.
Possibly. Exactly.
Absolutely whacked out crazy.
I am a little bit. Actually, the Stephen King one made complete sense. I totally was like, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense, because it was a story that had lots of, you know, death and destruction and murdering and strangling and things like that, so...
Plus, you got hit by a van once.
No, I didn't.
You did... Oh, so that was just Stephen King?
Yeah.
Oh.
I did get rear-ended by a van, and then I was taken to the hospital, and I was strapped onto a board for 7 hours.
There we go. Problem solved. It's exactly the same thing.
Exactly the same thing.
Yep.
So, yes, that's exactly what... I write like Stephen King. I am Stephen King in a different body.
It's very fun, but, you know,
younger,
whatever.
More attractive body.
It would be very interesting if anybody wants to do it and sort of email us your... Your responses, you know, what you ended up with. That would be really fun to figure out
and,
who people get compared to.
Right. And if you think it is at all accurate.
It's not.
It's not. But, I mean, I think it's probably looking at the verbs that you're using, to be honest. Your verbiage.
Yeah, I'm sure. And it's some of the sentence structure, I'm sure. It's looking at.
Well, right.
I probably got to call it Dickens. Because
million word sentence.
That was a big sentence. Now that I look at it, it's like 9 lines. It's a really big sentence, but it's an awesome sentence.
So that, yes, exactly. And also, speaking of writing letters, we this week up on Letters of Note, there was an absolutely just heartwarming letter from a mother to Patrick Stewart and the cast of Star Trek Next Generation, thanking them for the effect that they had, positive effect that they had on her son's life.
It was muscular dystrophy.
Right. It was, it's just a very sweet letter. And, you know, I'm sure Star Trek has been important to a lot of people and science fiction has been important to a lot of people. So our question this week is, how has science fiction been important or relevant to your life? I've been trying to think about the question. Myself. How about you, Duke?
I've just decided that almost nothing's important to my life, so
other than the fact that you're going to school for it, you know, totally just ignore that.
I don't know. I feel like it's important in a kind of weird way that it's influential on the world. Like that it's I don't know. It's because I read so many science fiction. And then I see things happening that I'm like, I've read about that. And now they're doing it.
Right.
And maybe there's something about, like, maybe there's something, because I get amazed by things. Like, the idea that we went into space, like, that is just amazing to me. And nobody pays attention to it. Like, it's amazing. And it's like, we put freaking people in space.
It still boggles my mind. I mean, it's been, 50 years since the first man in space, and it still boggles, utterly boggles my mind. And I watch films, and I'm terrified of the space scenes, which is fascinating. I have a sort of combination of agoraphobia and heights. I don't know what fear of heights is called. But anyway, the two combined make space scenes kind of terrifying. I'm totally convinced I'm going to fall into the TV screen.
And that's why you're fantig, is you're completely irrational.
Totally, completely irrational, obviously. But no, I mean, is there anything like any specific science fiction novel or trope or whatever that you found super inspirational in your life?
Inspirational or fascinating?
Or just important to you, to how your worldview?
I mean, I don't know if there's a particular work, but you know, most science fiction, even if it's negative science fiction, it always has this sort of view of science as being progressing, not necessarily progressive, but progressing, right. Advancing, doing great things for society, which I always find rather interesting and kind of heartwarming in a weird way. And then bad stuff happens in the book and then people die, but
right, and that's sad. But yeah, it's true. Science fiction to me has always been a very hopeful thing, even the darkest science fiction.
Yeah, because even when you read the dark stuff, like, there are things in there that are, like, really nice. Like, you think, like, okay, you read, like, Brave New World, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's this very effed up sort of place, but then you think about some of the stuff, you know, like, some of the technological advances, what that has produced for this society, and you're like,
right,
you know, get rid of all the bad stuff, and, like, these are really happy stuff.
Right, the heart of the heart of the stories, the heart of the characters, you know.
Sometimes, well, I don't know so much about the heart of the characters for that one.
Well, yeah, exactly. But in many science fiction novels, it's just, you know, you see that glimmer of hope.
Yeah.
I think in most science fiction, you see a glimmer of hope.
I think it's there, yeah.
It totally is. Maybe not. I could be completely wrong. I mean, to me, I'm fanty for a reason, obviously. I was more influenced by fantasy at a young age than I was science fiction. But I devoured Ray Bradbury's short stories. It's amazing that I'm not more obsessed with short stories now, because I'm madly in love with short stories when I was 7. but whatever. I'm not sure. Yeah, like I said, I was more of a fantasy girl. And those definitely had a huge impact on my life, fantasy stories.
Well, I mean, they did aid in making you slightly insane, so.
Well, that. too.
I love ripping on you. It's fantastic.
I know. But yeah, I think my progressive sort of ideology is probably largely in part due to the science fiction that I read growing up.
All right. Well, good. Good.
Maybe.
So if you guys want to answer the question, it's really easy to get your answer to us. You can email us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can actually call us and leave a voicemail message at 206-203-1686. Please send us a voicemail. Even if you want to scream at us, maybe we'll play it. It'll be fun. Or you can leave a comment somewhere on skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com or send us an app message on Twitter at our Twitter account, which is twitter.com, the slashy thing, skiffyandfanty. And yeah, so we'd love to hear from you. We're back finally after the vacation, so yeah.
It was a nice vacation. I got to watch Eureka.
And I got to enjoy England.
Oh no, you suck.
I know, it was fantastic. Oh, I'm freaking.
All right, everybody, have a great week. And right. Maybe I'll be back next week.
Maybe, and maybe we'll do some voice acting.
Yes, let's.
All right, we'll see if we can
make you do some.
Well, we'll see what we can do about maybe a little variety for next episode.
Excellent.
All right, guys, we'll see you later.
Autobots, roll out!